Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
I think we're all excited. If you've ever looked at me, a picture of me, you've ever seen me in our life, you know, damn well, I'm excited. Because this is a holiday talking about food, enjoying food, and boy, do I love that. That is my favorite thing on the planet. A lot of fun things coming up. Cavs getting ready to start here in a few minutes, taking on the Hawks. We'll obviously react to them when that's all finished. We'll also talk to Greg Swartz. Bleacher Report covers the NBA for them. That'll be at 9:40 after the game's all wrapped up and done. But I guess where I kind of want to start with you guys, it's kind of building off of our conversation yesterday. And if you missed yesterday, don't worry. We'll recap. We'll get there. But it's behind the idea of everybody, including Albert Breer, kind of the one who started the conversation here, of a quarterback competition in Cleveland next year and bringing in competition for Deshaun Watson in a way that they wouldn't do it last year by bringing back Joe Flacco for this season. They didn't want to have the competition. It was sort of, you know, keep the pressure off of Deshaun and let him focus on playing football and being here. I said yesterday I'm in full support of it, but of course there was the one thing that scared me. The one thing being the fact that when you announce a quarterback competition, you're essentially throwing it out there that you have the idea. Deshaun Watson is still in the picture. When you say quarterback competition and bringing in competition for Deshaun, it leaves the door open that Deshaun could be playing next year. And he could be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. And I think to a lot of people that would upset them. I don't think a lot of us would be very happy with that idea. Even if it's sort of, you know, how true that the competition would be, right? Whether you say that Deshaun has a chance to be the starter just because you sort of have to because you're putting the money on the line, saying that you're giving him the fair shot and putting it out there. A real competition, even where Deshaun more than likely to whoever you bring in, as long as it's, you know, if you brought in Jameis Winston or somebody Jameis Winston adjacent in terms of skill level, you'd assume that Deshaun, if he looks anything like he did this year, would lose out that competition 10 out of 10 times. But I think then the conversation shifts. If you're going to say quarterback competition and Deshaun has a shot, and then we also have reports coming out, which you have to think have been, you know, purposefully sort of leaked by the Browns if every insider was willing to say it, that the Browns don't have this idea that they want to move on from Kevin Stefanski, move on from Andrew Berry. They're more likely they want to run it back. They understand what this year was. It was sort of the failure, and we want to run it back. Okay, but now you sort of combo that with the idea of you want to bring Deshaun back into the picture and give him the opportunity to compete for the spot. That's where it sort of comes to me. If you're bringing back Kevin Stefanski, you bring back Andrew Berry, and you give the opportunity to bring back Deshaun, who's being held accountable? Like the Browns season is a complete flop. And if you're telling me we haven't necessarily fully learned that Deshaun's not the guy, right? Let's go have a quarterback competition. Let's see if Deshaun can once again go out and compete. The way that they said this year is he continued to struggle, he gives us the best chance to win. Clearly wasn't the case, right? They won one game. Jameis Winston's already won two. And against better opponents for the majority of the time than Deshaun was playing against. So if you're going to go back to the idea of competition and then can fall back to the idea of, hey, we're paying this guy a lot of money, so let's just roll him back out there, see what happens. Okay, you then have Deshaun back with Kevin Stefanski, with Andrew Berry at the top of it all. Who is being held accountable? Somebody, when your year goes this bad, should be sort of put in that light of, okay, this went wrong because of this. And if you ask me that question going in before those comments and before sort of that realization dawned on me, is the blame goes to Deshaun Watson. Right? You move on from him after this year because you can look at it and say, if we're going to bring back Kevin Stefanski after a terrible year, if you want to bring back Andrew Berry after the horrific year that it's been, clearly the problem was Deshaun. You felt you had the right guys in place, you tried to get your quarterback, and you missed on it. But then if you bring him back, we've now come full circle. And it was Ken and Anthony talking this morning, the idea of bringing back Deshaun and how Cleveland would feel about it, that it just, I'm sitting there and thinking with everything rolled back, you haven't learned. You're essentially washing this year away and chalking it up to what? What actually happened in this season? You're just going to tell me, things didn't go the way we wanted. Deshaun got hurt. We're pinning that on the loss. Like, you were basically done with the year before Deshaun was ever out of it. Your year was already pretty much sunk. In large part, at least in my eyes, due to Deshaun Watson. So if you don't come away from this year saying Deshaun was the problem, then you tell me that you've learned nothing. And I think that whole idea is the thing that upsets me most. If you learn absolutely nothing, the entire season was for naught. Right? When you have your lows and your failures, there should be a learning experience that comes from that. You shouldn't just walk away and say, well, the season was sort of a bust, right? There's very few scenarios I think you can walk away from and that be the case. People talk about injuries being a part of the NFL all the time. Listen, if you lose like your top so many guys or so many of your top guys to the point where you're like, okay, the season just sort of fell apart, I think you might be able to walk away from a season and say, well, the only thing we learned is that our star players, we need them to compete. But when you're the Browns in this case, I don't think that's what you've learned. The injuries are not what completely derailed your season. There was clearly a lot more going into it that put you behind the eight ball this year. Deshaun starts next year. You're telling me it wasn't Kevin, it wasn't Andrew, it wasn't Deshaun. Even if it's Jimmy's problem, you can't blame it on Jimmy. The man owns the team. He's not just going to up and away. But it all roots back to that. You have three guys there who it all comes back to, and you're telling me it's none of them. That's why I don't like the idea of a quarterback competition. Not because I don't think that spot should be necessarily up for grabs, because I think it absolutely should be. And if you're going to tell me we're going through it as a formality, there's no chance Deshaun starts, then okay. But there's no way for me to know that, especially if the organization keeps going on the path that they're on, not willing to take accountability. Nobody has come out, and we talked to Daryl yesterday, and he said he thinks it's just more so a matter of time, and this isn't necessarily the time to do it, but nobody has said that the Deshaun experiment was a failure. Hey, that one's on us. Even if it was a group effort, we all wanted him in. Hey, we're taking that one on the chin. All right, we messed up. It was our fault. Let's move on from here. That's up in the air, but if you're giving Deshaun a legitimate competition, a legitimate chance to come back next year, that's just not the case. The Browns have shown, I think, that they're not willing to admit that. This year has proven that more than anything. The idea that you want to keep rolling Deshaun back out over and over and over again has proved that. It was clearly terrible. You didn't want to go back on your word. Even if you didn't have to come out and say it, you could have said it with your actions. And it's the same scenario, although I think fans would appreciate it if they would just come out and say it bluntly. But it's also the same scenario going into this offseason. If you offer me a free quarterback competition, you're once again doing the exact same thing. And okay, let's say we're not blaming on the three guys that we've now listed. The idea of giving maybe Ken Dorsey play calling might have opened up that avenue. Right? You could say, sort of, even if you want to pin it as a scapegoat, you could have said, well, we tried to bring in Ken Dorsey, things didn't work. I think that the way that the offense has looked with Jameis and with Ken Dorsey calling the plays and sort of this hybrid Kevin and Ken offense, you're beyond the scapegoat idea of Ken Dorsey. That can't be the full problem either. We talked about the idea last night of, like, what do you learn from a season like this? What can you take away? The biggest fear for me is that you take away nothing and you walk in next year and you can win, like, 7 to 8 games. That's the worst case scenario.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Scenario if you're an NFL team. And it seems like with every move that the Browns could potentially make that they're putting on the table as legitimate possibilities are willing to do just that. No lesson. And hey, we'll just sort of see what comes of it. I just don't think that I can sit there and live with that. Other teams in the NFL that go on and fail and they drop games and it doesn't look great. It feels like there's a lesson taken away almost every time. Even the worst of the worst teams, you can learn things about your team throughout the year, right? Like a Patriots team that's not going to win a lot of games this year when it's all said and done. You can take away that, hey, we feel pretty good about Drake May. He's looked pretty good over this time. You probably have looked at your piece and say, hey, we learned about a couple of guys that we have. The Browns are one of the oldest teams in the NFL. You knew what you had. You're not really trying out a whole lot of positions other than like, a Cedric Tillman, who you saw sort of come into his own at this point. You've learned maybe a little bit about Jerry Jeudy. That's not a big enough lesson for me. When you move on from your number one wide receiver in season, and then you learn about a couple of rookies, that's not what you learned. The offense hasn't functioned the same way. It's not even like a, hey, we moved on from Amari and learned that the offense can still hum. No, you didn't. There's no lessons being learned. If you want to give me a lesson, somebody has to be held accountable. There has to be somebody, eyes to the public, that I can look at and say, okay, the Browns have looked at everything, assessed everything, and told me that's the problem. That's the real issue that we've run into. And right now, there's not that person. And it's not necessarily that like you go ahead and call for anybody's job because it's never the right thing to do, right? I'm never going to go out there and say that this person should probably be out of there and absolutely be fired. I say, I'll never do that. I'll probably do that at some point. But right now, especially with this team, it's not, hey, somebody should lose their job. But there is sort of a sense that has to go with it of somebody has to be the one to go down for the Browns only walking away with a few wins in a year where they felt like they were Super Bowl contenders. It's not a year you thought you were going to be bad and ended up being bad. Somebody has to be at the front of that. If it has to be Kevin Stefanski, it wouldn't be my first choice, and I wouldn't be happy with the move, but at least you told me, hey, we think that we found the problem. I'd probably tell you you're wrong, but there was an idea there. You think you figured it out. At least you took the steps to make that true. The Browns have simply not done that. 216-474-0092. If the Browns bring back Deshaun next year, is it a sense of admitting no accountability for the lack of a season, and does that bother you? You can also get to be on X at Volnick Jake, so we can get to our social media reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. All right, a lot of fun things in store tonight. I got a gripe to pick with Nick Wilson. He called it hack radio. He also explained his thinking a little bit with it. I'll give it to him. Maybe he's listening. Maybe Nick wants to defend himself. He can do it to me privately, publicly. I don't care. We're going to do a draft Thanksgiving because it's hack radio in my eyes. When if I did it 3 years in a row and I went to said I'm going to do the same draft, okay. A little bit of hack radio, right? You're doing the same thing over and over again. Let's not repeat things we've already done. Not in their entirety, right? Probably shouldn't do that. Probably shouldn't roll around every single year and on the same day do the exact same segment. Pretty bad. Like, I've never done this. It's a different take. It's also something fun. Everything becomes hack radio. Radio is, if that's your definition of hack radio, we're all hack radio. We borrow segments, we twist them slightly, and that's the way that it is. That ends up how it goes. That's what turns into hack radio, which Nick said a little bit, which I give him his pass for. All right, but we're going to do a draft. We'll go around the room. We'll most overrated Thanksgiving food. And I'll tack one more onto Nick. I heard him ask everybody last year what their Thanksgiving plate looked like. That's also hack radio. But moving on from that, we'll do that. We'll go around the room. We'll also let you guys jump in on that. 8:40, we'll bring in Anthony Lant for Change Your Mind. We'll do Get a Grip at 9 o'clock, as it usually does. And Greg Swartz, as I mentioned earlier on, going to join us after the Cavs game at 9:40. He's from Bleacher Report, covers the NBA, help us break down sort of what's been for the Cavs and what's to come for the rest of the year. But right now, would you have a problem with the Browns keeping everyone around and failing to take the accountability? 216-474-0092. It's Jake Volnick right here on 92.3 The Fan. If you drink, don't get behind the wheel. Ride services are available everywhere. Those exist. Make sure you take those. But I think we can sort of group it in now. But Jake Volnick with you guys here. I guess continuing on our conversation of where it was, like, I just think the Browns have to be able to blame somebody. There has to be somebody that you put the blame on this year, right? If it's not Deshaun, it's got to be somebody else. I just don't know who it is. And when it comes to a quarterback competition, like, I'm all for the fabricated idea of this quarterback competition, right? If you want to go to the lengths to make it sound like, well, Deshaun has a chance to earn his job as a starter, but you're really sitting there in the back of your mind going, well, this guy's got to be on the roster anyway. We'll let him come into training camp so we do the thing that looks right here where we give him an actual chance, the guy that we paid millions of dollars to, but there's no chance he's actually the starter. We've seen enough out of him. And then you go with somebody else that's great. And whether or not you want that to be Jameis Winston or a rookie, another reclamation project of a veteran, I don't care. As long as it's not a legitimate competition. I know a lot of you in the way that he's played in sort of the vibes that he's brought along would probably go with Jameis Winston. Energy seems to be great around the team. People seem to be bought in a little more with Jameis as a quarterback. And if nothing else, I mean, we're getting cinema. We're getting the guy talking about Amazon and how he's ordering things off it at the end of the game. He's ordering up a W. Should be there by the morning. Like, we're having fun here. I think everyone can agree that we're back to having a fun time. I don't know how much of that comes when, like, if you win six games and you think you're winning a lot more than that going into next year, but maybe cross that bridge when you get there. As for Jameis's idea and staying in Cleveland, he made that pretty apparent today. Let's get a listen to what Jameis had to say.
Of course, in terms of my family, right? When I think about my family, I think about, you know, moving my kids, my wife having to find new friends. I think anytime where you're able to solidify a role in a place and play good at that place, you like to be home. But however, that's out of my control. Again, my focus is on, man, one play at a time, Jeff, and just stacking it up day after day after day.
Now, I expect nothing else to come out of Jameis's mouth. Like, hey, if you go out there and tell me, nah, not really. Like, you're like, I'll just try out my options elsewhere. Like, no, he's clearly had some good games, even if it hasn't come directly with Brown success, right? 2-2. That's fine for this season, based on everything else that we've had. But, like, the Saints game, he only put 14 points up on the board. His day looks great. All right, like, all things considered, you take out the Chargers game right now, and Jameis has played close to, like, what you've needed out of him and what you could possibly ask for. I just think there's something that goes into that, and if you're going to make it a quarterback competition with Jameis and Deshaun, I think a lot of you would be happy to bring Jameis back. I think everybody would sort of get on the bandwagon of, if Jameis Winston wants to be back in Cleveland, listen, it might not be the best thing, but you can guarantee you're going to have a better situation than if you were to roll back with Deshaun Watson or possibly, you know, make the same mistake that you made last year, which is you have a guy here who at least gave you something, gave you a spark. If it's not, wouldn't have been this year to, like, make Joe Flacco the starter, but to have him in the building because you know the offense can at least look good with him. And sure, like, it's the idea that you could bring him back, and that's an option to you. Not bringing Jameis back is essentially that same exact mistake. And I wouldn't want Jameis to be the starter. I've said that several times over the course of the last couple of weeks. Like, he's not the pick that I would go with. I would 100% hands down take another reclamation project or a rookie if you let Kevin Stefanski pick him. But I'd also take Jameis Winston over Deshaun Watson 10 out of 10 times. Just based on the small sample size that we have. That's far enough for me. So if you want to go to Jameis, I think that's you're off to a much better option. You know the guy wants to be here. Whether or not the gimmicks kind of get old is one thing, but if he wants to be here and they wanted him back, at least you have a semblance of something that could maybe work.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
The other thing today that that came up that was sort of an interesting one, Kevin Stefanski asked whether or not Myles Garrett could be the defensive player of the year. He seemed pretty on board with it. Right? And every coach is going to be for their guy. Just the media narrative around it's a little weird. Let's just hear from Kevin Stefanski on the topic.
I mean, if you're asking me, yes, I don't have a vote, but I think, and I made this point the other day, what he's able to accomplish with the amount of attention that he gets is truly impressive. It's like a degree of difficulty type thing. So for him to produce when they're trying in everything in their power to make sure he doesn't wreck the game is again, running out of superlatives.
Before I get into like the X's and O's of this idea, can I just say this is like my least favorite thing, especially for this award. It has now turned into like a lobbying fest. It has become like everybody has to go out there and try to sell the media on who this should be. I like this a lot more, and I understand it. Like, I guess this is sort of where we are with like MVPs too, is it sort of turns into a popularity contest, and we've been there for like all-star games or whatever adjacent to that, Pro Bowls in the NFL. I just hate the fact that it's everybody goes out and has to tell you why they think it should be them. Like, the play should speak for themselves. The people voting should be the people watching this and sort of, all right, yeah, it should be this guy, not, well, a lot of Browns narrative thinking that Myles Garrett should be it. Are they right? Let's go back and look at that. And why do they think that is? They're going to sell us on this point. Well, they're maybe they're right. Like, okay, sure. It's exactly, it was what, J.J. Watt basically arguing he didn't lobby hard enough for his brother when he was on the Pat McAfee show. Like, what are we doing? Like, you have the right to do it. I don't think that's what should come to like, he didn't lose Defensive Player of the Year last year because J.J. Watt was not on social media and using his platform to try to get T.J. the award. And nor should that ever be the case. And this obviously isn't on Kevin Stefanski. Like, the question was asked in the media, and he's always going to tell you it should be the guy. Like, the social media campaigning sucks. But more to what it actually is, whether or not Myles could win back-to-back MVPs to me, or Defensive Player of the Years, excuse me, whether or not that back-to-back opportunity is there, I just don't know if I'm sold on that. And not the idea that I don't think Myles deserves it, because if you made me pick preseason every single year, I would probably tell you it's Myles Garrett, because we watch him every week and we see what he can do. It was easier to give him the award last year. Like, you were talking about one of the premier defenses in NFL history, at least for a portion of the year when you were talking about the Browns, and when they were at home specifically, there was no doubt. And Myles Garrett was the leader of that defense. He's the guy everybody looks to. Like, if you're having your whole unit be as good as you could possibly imagine and ask for, the guy at the top of that should probably be in the conversation. That's an easy sell. Not to mention, I think, by the time you got around to Joe Flacco in the back half of the year, sort of where he hit the Myles slump, like, you were to the point of, okay, now the Browns are also underdogs that you can root for. They sort of turned into almost a Cinderella story. Like, yeah, I think the idea that you could go for him, and they obviously had success and made the playoffs, it made sense. I don't know that it's this year. I don't know that you can look at a defensive unit who's been like close to average and point to it and say, yeah, that one right there, that's the group of people who I think should be, you know, put up at the top. And the guy leading that group on a team who has won 3 games this year, that's the one we should point to. and look at how well that guy's doing. Like, we know Miles is good. I think as much as it's an individual award, it also comes down to team success. And if you want to talk about the individuals of it, like, Miles has not been that elite this year either. Like, he's near the top of the NFL in sacks, yes. He has 10 sacks on the year. Like, he's, I think, 1.5 behind the leader, if not one. I think you're looking at a very inconsistent version of Myles Garrett, whether or not that be, you know, the effort or just being schemed out of the game. I think when you talk about statistics and not showing up, like when you're talking about that for a cornerback, right, that might be a conversation you get to have. When he doesn't have a lot of pass deflections and interceptions, you could be like, teams are legitimately avoiding throwing the ball at this guy because he's that good. And that was sort of the conversation, the whole ploy that got Miles into the conversation and ended up winning him the award last year was exactly what Kevin Stefanski said. Teams are scheming to specifically slow Miles down because they know how much he can wreck a game. That works when the defense is still performing outside of it, and you can point to that. It can't be everything for a defensive end. You eventually have to show up. Miles has shown up in slight hyperbole here, but on the stat sheet, for like 3 games this year. He has 10 sacks. 8 of them have come in 3 games this year. He has 2 3-sack games and a 2-sack game. And then 2 more games this year, he failed to put up a single sack, not a single tackle. That is inconsistent play. That to me is not, hey, like, the team's not succeeding, and by the way, this guy on the stat sheet disappears sometimes, right? Very clear. On the stat sheet disappears sometimes. I understand Myles Garrett never disappears. I know how great he is, but when you're talking about awards, statistics go into that. Things like that should be taken into account. I just don't know how you can sit there and not bring that up as part of it. 216-474-0092. Luca Macedonia, I see you there. We'll hit a break when we come back. We'll get to your call on the other side as well. Ohio State, Michigan, the game coming up, and I think we're moving some goalposts. I think the goalposts are moving when it comes to Ryan Day. Again, we'll get to all that next. It's Jake Volnick right here on The Fan. Let's get to Luke in Macedonia. Luke, how you doing?
Good. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. What do you got for me?
I just want to, you guys are talking about whose fault it is or whatever. I don't think it's no one's fault on the team. I think we had a great team at the end of the year. Who were we missing? We were missing Joe Flacco. All he needed was $1 million he expected to come here. But apparently Mr. Berry did not want him here. Watson did not want him here. And I just by the way Flacco played, we all knew that he was better than Watson. So my decision is it's all Barry's fault. And as a football player myself, when you got a bad team and everything's down, you really don't care about playing good. You just want to get ready to get the next job. And you're not a happy team. And if you look at it, they're not a happy team. The Cavs are happy. The Indians are happy, but the Browns aren't happy because they're losing. So yeah. If we had Flacco starting, I think we would have been winning. I could be wrong, but I know for one thing, Barry begged Haslam to make that trade.
All right. Luke, appreciate the call. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think there's multiple things that go into that, and I think if you put it to Joe Flacco as a difference, I think you can also pin that back on Deshaun. Then I think you kind of come full circle there. I don't know. It's so tough because, like, I obviously don't support everything that went on with Barry. I also know for a fact that Andrew Barry isn't the only guy in the building who said, let's go get Deshaun Watson, right? Like, everybody's told you, I mean, you can draw back to it. The owner signs a check at the end of the day. Like, he has to guarantee him the money. So you can definitely pin part of that back on Jimmy Haslam. But even if it was Barry's idea, which we do not know, part of that you can also pin back. To me, it's more of a Deshaun problem, but I can get much more behind the idea that it's a Barry problem than it is a Stefanski problem. I mean, the guy, he hasn't exactly built everything through the draft, and his trades have been sort of hit or miss up to this point. You could argue first-round picks didn't come with it, but it, again, all kind of wraps back around. What I want to get into, though, the game coming up on Saturday, Ohio State, Michigan, a lot going on around it. Not the greatest Michigan team you've ever seen, that's for sure. But obviously with Ryan Day losing the last three, you know it's going to be a big one. It always is, but this one seems like it has a little extra on it. From the beginning of the year, everyone's sort of pinning this to Ryan's day job sort of rides on whether or not he can beat Michigan and then sort of what comes after it. I just feel like now when we have this conversation, Ohio State fans are sort of moving the goalposts when it comes to Ryan Day and beating Michigan. Going into the year, it was always you have to beat Michigan. That's what you do. As Ohio State, you don't lose to Michigan. If you do and you're a head coach, you don't keep your job for very long. That's the sort of the indicator is, hey, I can't have a guy that's not going out there and trying to win national championships or being put in a position to. And then on top of it, also losing to a rival. Those are the two big things you bring somebody in. You want to win national championships on your Ohio State, and you want to beat Michigan. Now it feels like beating Michigan because of the season they had, it's just not enough. Like, winning the game is simply not enough. Everyone wanted you to win, but now that you've seen Michigan and sort of that they've taken this step back or this step to retool this year and sort of, you know, bring back full power next year, now it's like, okay, he should beat Michigan. This is a game he has to win, and you know what? He shouldn't just win it. He should dominate in this game. He should win it with conviction. I just don't think that you get to switch it up on Ryan Day in that sense. I don't think you get to take it from you have to beat them, that's a big thing, they're in your head, you can't win that game, to now the standard being switched to you have to win it. The standard is you do not lose that game. And that's what it has been. You lost it for 3 years. It was sort of, hey, Ryan Day, now you're on the hot seat because we don't take kindly to losing this. As you shouldn't. But now it's, you got to beat them by, you know, the spread's 20. And I hear people saying, you got to win this game by, yeah, you have to cover the spread. You should dominate this game. This should be one that you want to come out and lay it on to Michigan, and you should. And if not, there's still questions surrounding it. I don't think you get to do that. I expect Ohio State to do that. I think you're crazy if you don't think Ohio State's coming out here and trying to put every single point on the board that they can up until the very end of the game, because I think they will be. The whole thing, I mean, for like Ryan Day, Michigan's just overblown in my eyes. Like, yes, that is the standard. You do have to do it, and you shouldn't be satisfied with him losing 3 years in a row. That should not be something that you sit back and you're like, well, it is what it is. No, but like you also have to take into account things that go with it. The Michigan teams that Ryan Day faced were not the Michigan teams that Urban Meyer was facing, right? They're not legitimate national title contenders. And I understand that's not necessarily the biggest point for everybody. Like, you still feel you have to win those games. But that's the reality of it. Like, there were some Michigan teams that Urban Meyer was facing. I mean, let's be realistic here. Like, these teams were bottom of the barrel. It was essentially this year's Michigan team several times. Of course, you're not going to lose that game. There's no way that you ever lose that. I don't buy into the idea of, like, that's the difference, is he just can't beat him. No, he beat him the first year and then happened to play one of the strongest programs in the country. But the thing is, like, why is it now it can't just be the win? You would have been satisfied had Kyle McCord and Ryan Day walked in there last year and beat that team, the team that ended up being national champions. It would have been enough for you then. But now that they've fallen off, now it's not enough. Now just winning isn't enough. That's where it sort of, to me, is like, what are we doing? We're clearly moving the goalposts here. And I want to know if you think they are or not. If you think that's always the way that it's been, but I see it as that has to be the answer. I don't see a lot of people just being satisfied with the win to Michigan and sort of just accepting it. 216-474-0092. I mean, the bar has been raised. And it's by Ohio State fans. And it's in all aspects this year. The bar has continued to be raised, and I understand that sometimes that happens throughout a year, but like coming in, you know you had one of the best teams in the country, but now it's you're essentially going national title or bust, and you know the conversation that's going to go around if Ohio State doesn't come away as champions this year. It's going to all fall back onto Ryan Day once again. And it's gone from the conversation we're just having, beat Michigan, to not enough now. You can hold him that standard and should. I just think when we're continuously raising the bar and raising the bar and setting that high of expectations, it seems to me more so not even an idea of you want to hold Ryan Day to a standard and a standard that Ohio State coaches are raised or are being held to. It seems more so to the idea now that you don't just want to hold him to the standard. I think Ohio State fans might just not openly be willing to admit they just simply don't like the guy. Like, the three losses in a row have you rubbed you the wrong way, and you're not going back on it. I think that's more so of raising the bar. Because there was a lot more leeway in every other department, and I get that's a big part that comes with it, but Ryan Day has not been a bad coach for the Buckeyes, and to say that he has been would be absolutely ridiculous. He's lost some key games. I'm not saying he's perfect. I'm not saying that you have to be gung-ho for the guy. But to just try to run him out of town, like if he doesn't get a national championship this year, a lot of people are paying their teams money. It just doesn't come back to the $20 million that is attached to the number that is attached to the Ohio State roster. I would be willing to bet there's a lot of teams sitting around that. And it's the bar being moved in another instance this year. You have two top five wins. Your narrative of Ryan Day can't win the big game. You have two top five wins. You took down Penn State and you took down Indiana, but all you're going to point to is, hey, well, it's Penn State, and you know they could never win the big game either. James Franklin never can go out there and win the big game. That's his gripe too. And then Indiana is a team that it feels like nobody would take seriously. I sort of brought up this point of like, if Ryan Day loses to Indiana, the thing that comes down from that is, see, I told you, Ryan Day can't win the big game. Played a top five team in the country, one that you expect him to win, and he doesn't win it. But when he does come away from that game with a win, and a dominant win at that, it was, well, that Indiana team wasn't for real. That Indiana team wasn't really all that good. It's just a constant shift. There's no, like, tip of the cap to Ryan Day ever. I genuinely think it's come down to a hatred. I don't know that anything aside from winning a national championship, and maybe even then, changes Buckeyes fans' opinion about that. I don't know that there's legitimately anything that changes it, because even if I think you win the national championship this year, it's, well, did he, what are you supposed to do? That's what, this roster was built to do that. They're the best. They should have absolutely won the national championship this year. Look at all the recruits they brought in. Look at all the guys that they had. It's like, why do we go to that standard? Why is that the leap? It's just a constant jump. Like, everyone is gung-ho, completely happy, and we'll talk about the miracle runs that went on with Jim Tressel and his championship team, and then you can go to Urban Meyer and his championship team. Like, at the end of the day, it's a championship. You proved you were the best team in a country any given year. But I get a strong sense that would not be the case with this championship team. It wouldn't be Ryan Day finally got over the hump. We can finally put it to bed. He's not a bad coach. And it would be more so like, okay, Ryan Day, you did exactly what we've been asking you to do. Now go prove it to me again next year. Right? It's a constant forward step because his tenure didn't start the exact way that you wanted it to. The guy came in for a few years and didn't win a national championship. The bar at Ohio State is unbelievably high at all times, but it just seems like in this instance, you just keep knocking it up a notch every single time that something good comes across your desk. It's like, well, I can't just be happy about it. We can't just accept that. Let's just let's push it up one more. Let's give him a flower, but not his flowers. 216-474-0092. Again, on X, at Volnick Jake. You guys can get on the conversation. I'll be asking you to get on the conversation here coming up at 8 o'clock, too. You can call it Hack Radio. You can call it what you want. We're going to have some fun. Most overrated Thanksgiving food. We're doing a Mount Rushmore draft. Your top four will go around the room. I also want to get you guys involved in it. I'll put something on social media here during the break. We'll get you guys. You can comment there again, at Volnick Jake. Also, 216-474-0092. We'll get to your calls on the most overrated Thanksgiving food as well. That's all when we come back. It's Jake Volnick right here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.